History was just made. Now, if you were paying attention, you saw two of the three presidential candidates making a huge historic announcement about the future of Bitcoin and the United States government. And as the historic news was making headlines across the world, Kamala Harris, the third one, appeared to want to jump in with her support. But secret moves just done reveal that the Biden-Harris administration is actually trying to sabotage the announcement. And even worse, preemptive moves being done are subverting the will of the people. In this video, I'm going to break down the big news announcements that could change the world. A historical parallel from about 80 years ago to see how this could change things. We're going to look at the math behind what was proposed and what it could mean. We're going to look at the Kamala Harris campaign's seemingly abrupt about face, and then the secret rug pull showing the administrative's true colors. Now, there's a lot here, right? And as this race heats up, if you care about the future, then you need to see what's really going on. Now, real quick, if you're new to the channel, my name is Mark Moss, and I've been making educational content about Bitcoin, macroeconomics, and freedom for, I don't know, about 7 years now. I've coached thousands of investors on navigating these markets, and I'm a partner in a Bitcoin hedge fund. I was speaking at the Bitcoin conference this year, witnessing live the announcements we're going to cover. In fact, I spoke on the main stage about 2 hours before Trump, so I was able to get a lot of behind-the-scenes insider information that I'm going to share with you right now. So let's jump right in. All right, jumping right in, we are talking about what I'm calling the largest, most culturally important event happening in the world right now. Now, quantitatively, we had about 25, maybe 30,000 people. It's about the biggest event in the world. Now, of course, there's bigger other types of events, but not conferences. But more importantly, I call it the most largest culturally important event. And the reason why I say culturally important is because it reached across every area of life. We had the tops from each industry, the top people from Wall Street, the top people from FinTech. We had two of the three current presidential candidates for the United States, the leader of the free world, probably the most important person in the world. We had a dozen plus senators and congressmen. We had top entertainers that were there. I mean, Kid Rock showed up. We had Russell Brand there, Dave Smith, the comic. We had entertainers, you name it, across the cultural mainstream. It was there. I mean, President Trump. I mean, it's a pretty big deal, right? And so this was a big deal. There was a lot of announcements coming out of it. Let's just kind of break this down. So the big news that, of course, I'm sure you're already knowing what we're talking about is the announcement by two of the three presidential candidates, RFK Jr. and Trump, and what they had to say about Bitcoin. Now, Bitcoin's come a long way. And if you're one of those people who still think it's like this magic internet money, you might want to pay attention. We literally have a presidential race being run on this platform. We have Larry Fink, head of BlackRock, the largest asset manager in the world, on CNBC a couple weeks ago, saying that he was wrong. He changed his mind. He did the work. He thinks Bitcoin is a legit asset that everyone should own. So if you don't believe Larry Fink and you don't believe Trump and RFK, you still think it's magic internet money, well, you're falling behind. But I'd still probably advise you to watch the rest of this, because when you see what Kamala is doing, it might change your mind. Okay, let's talk about some of the announcements that we had. So the first up was RFK Jr., and he spoke on Friday. He went first before Trump and before other announcements. So he kind of got the first mover advantage, and he vowed some really big things. He gave a great speech. We're going to link to it in the show notes down below if you want to go watch his full speech. It's definitely worth it. He had some really good script writers, and he stuck to the script. I'll tell you why that's important in a minute. But basically, in his talk, in his speech, he vowed to make Bitcoin a strategic reserve asset. This has been talked about quite a bit. Now, what does that mean, strategic reserve? Well, you hear me talk about oil, for example. So we have the strategic petroleum reserves, right? The SPRs. That's what Biden was draining. They're pretty much empty. Not much reserves left. He drained those to keep gas prices down that he caused through inflation. But the Bitcoin strategic reserve would be like an oil strategic reserve, or it'd be like the gold that we have in Fort Knox that backs up the U.S. government. And he wants to make Bitcoin a strategic reserve asset, and he calls it corruption's greatest foe. So the thing that I really enjoyed about RFK's talk is that, and actually if I go back to some things Trump said, and even going back to some of the things that even Larry Fink from BlackRock said, they are not just giving it lip service. In this, they're explaining why. What are the mechanisms that drive supply and demand? You can tell that there's a real understanding about this. And so, for example, it's corruption's greatest foe. Corruption, because the governments of the world, the Federal Reserve and all the governments of the world, print an endless amount of money. That endless amount of money goes into forever wars. Those forever wars then become a honeypot for corruption. All that money goes to buy mansions for all these billionaires that are feeding off of this like industrial military complex, for example. That's one example of many. If elected, Kennedy intends to direct the Treasury, the United States Treasury, to purchase 550 Bitcoin every single day. 550 Bitcoin daily until the U.S. amasses a reserve of 4 million Bitcoin. It's a pretty big number, 550 a day until we get 400 million. Now, why do those numbers make sense? I'm going to come back to the 550 million in a minute, but for the 4 million Bitcoin, it's not just a random number. RFK Jr. wants to get the Bitcoin reserve to be about equal as the gold reserve. He sees them as maybe equally important. I think he sees that Bitcoin is the future, the bigger asset to have. And so he thinks that we should get Bitcoin reserves up to at least where we have the gold reserves. That's where that number comes in. The 550 Bitcoin per day, that's a bigger thing. We're going to get to the math of this in a minute and let you know what I think about that. A couple other key points of RFK's talk that I thought were really good was he emphasized Bitcoin's role in protecting individual freedom. And so I worked on the news desk at the event during RFK's talk, and I was saying it's not really that Bitcoin is on the ballot with RFK and Trump and not Kamala. It's not that Bitcoin is on the ballot. What's really on the ballot is freedom, individual freedom. Like, as people, we should be free to save our money in whatever we want to save it in, and we should be free to transact in whatever we want to transact it in. So it's not about Bitcoin. It's about preserving the individual's right to have freedom of choice. And that's what he says right here. He recounted how the Canadian truckers' protest, the freezing of the financial assets, influenced his advocacy. So when he saw what happened with the Canadian truckers' protest, how a peaceful, law-abiding protest was demonized by the Trudeau government, and literally bank accounts got frozen for even donating, like on GoFundMe, for example, that's what woke him up. Bitcoin made him realize the importance of financial freedom. This is something I say all the time. Without the freedom to transact, there is no freedom at all. So even though in the United States, our Constitution guarantees us freedom, such as the freedom to assemble, if I can't transact, as in put gas in my truck to drive to the assembly or get food when I get there or a hotel room, without the freedom to transact, I can't go exercise my right to assemble. We can go down the list, you understand. He said, quote, "I realize that transactional freedom, the freedom to transact, was as important as freedom of expression, because if you can't transact, you can't really express." He said in the First Amendment. He also stressed Bitcoin's potential to protect personal freedoms, promote accountability, and combat government corruption. Back to corruption's biggest foe, because of accountability. The government has so much corruption because there's no accountability. The Fed won't go through an audit. The military can't pass through an audit. The IRS can't get their books straight. And so because there's no accountability, then it breeds corruption. Bitcoin, he says, quote, is anti-war. It's anti-war. Sounds like a pretty good thing to me. I'm not for forever wars. I'm certainly not for nuclear threats coming out of Russia and Ukraine and that situation, potentially the Middle East as well. He said it's an insurmountable foe of government corruption. We talked about that. Now, he talks about backing the U.S. debt with hard assets. So the gold. The gold is a hard asset. That is backing assets. He wants it to include, as he says, Bitcoin to stabilize the dollar and control inflation. The strategy I'm proposing leverages the scarcity and liquidity of Bitcoin along with gold and other hard assets. So we already have gold, we already have oil, and he just wants to add Bitcoin. When you think about it in that terms, it doesn't seem that far-fetched. Now, after RFK went up, then the next day was Trump. As I said, I was speaking on the main stage a little bit before Trump, hoping to stay backstage and get a glimpse of him. Sad to say, that didn't work out. The security was crazy tight at the event. Secret Service was all over the place, and they cleared everybody out. I couldn't hang out back there. However, Trump went up, and a lot of people, including myself, thought that Trump would have to sort of one-up RFK. He'd have to go even bigger. RFK says, we want to get 4 million Bitcoin. Trump's going to have to say, well, we need 5 million Bitcoin. But that really wasn't the case. And to be honest with you, I wasn't super impressed with Trump's presentation, partly because it seemed like he just showed up and gave like a campaign rally speech as opposed to like a talk specifically to the Bitcoin crowd. Now, just for reference, the reason why both RFK and Trump both feel like they need to address the Bitcoin crowd specifically is because of the size. We'll come back to the size, the donations. We're going to look at that in a minute. So based off of the size and the need and the importance of coming to talk to them, you think he would have prepared a little bit better. Maybe he should have had someone write a speech and read the speech, but it seemed like he was just ad-libbing the whole time. I'm going to link to Trump's talk down below. It's still worth a watch. It's actually kind of funny, but he did say some really good points. If you were to basically take his whole talk and edit it down to just a few minutes, it was really good. It was all the fluff in between that sort of got you distracted. But here's a couple things. He also wants to create a strategic national Bitcoin stockpile reserve. So Trump and RFK are both on board with this. He wants to direct the U.S. Treasury to build a reserve of Bitcoin with the DOJ's current holdings. Now, this is the key piece. So currently, the U.S. government is one of the largest holders of Bitcoin in the world. I think about 204,000 or 210,000 Bitcoin, about 1% of all the Bitcoin in the world the U.S. government has. And what RFK and Trump both want to do is say, hey, the Bitcoin that's being held currently by the Department of Justice, because they've seized it from, you know, illicit things, they want to take the Bitcoin that the DOJ has and transfer it over to the Treasury. So if either one of them wins come November, they say that'll be day number one. They're going to do that. So they want to add to the stockpile. They want to direct the Treasury to build a reserve, and they want to take the DOG's current holdings as its core. All right. So take the 210,000, put it into the U.S. government's book permanently. They want to end an anti-Bitcoin policy. So the Biden administration, the Biden regime, has literally been running like on an anti-crypto campaign. That's what Elizabeth Warren calls it. Not mincing words here. She's been doing that. And then, of course, the actions speak louder than words. And he said he will fire Gary Gensler, head of the SEC, that's been extremely aggressive against this technology. He said he'll fire him on day one. The crowd had massive applause for that. He said he wants to end Operation Chokepoint 2.0. Chokepoint 2.0, I've talked about it quite a bit. And it's where basically the banks are choking out legal businesses because it's not fitting the Biden regime's ideology. So, for example, bank accounts getting shut down because you want to transfer money to a crypto exchange, for example. Businesses that are in the Bitcoin space. For example, my fund, I have a hedge fund, and it's called the Bitcoin Opportunity Fund. And because it has the word Bitcoin in it, as we were bringing in investment capital, people were having trouble getting money wired into our fund because it had that word in the name. That's an example of Chokepoint 2.0. And Trump said he wants to embrace stablecoins for U.S. dollar dominance. Now, for the Bitcoiners, that wasn't a real big point. They didn't like the stablecoins. However, I've been pretty open about it. I think the stablecoins are sort of this interim step. They're very complementary to Bitcoin right now. And we're seeing stablecoins sort of proliferate around the world in other countries, Argentina, Venezuela, Peru, Lebanon, Turkey, where their currencies are just completely collapsing. Moving to a U.S. dollar stablecoin is pretty easy for them. It works very well because they can't get physical dollars. And then he said he wants to end the development of a CBDC and block all future attempts. He said, as long as I'm president, there will be no CBDC in the United States. So again, if you take Trump's talk and you compress it down, a lot of good things. Now, they both basically said the same thing. Create a Bitcoin strategic reserve, and two, move the 200 and whatever, 4 or 10,000 Bitcoin, about 1% of the supply, over into the U.S. government's reserves. Okay, so that's what they are both talking about. I want to reiterate those points because we're going to come back to that. Now, after Trump, we had Senator Cynthia Lummis. Now, Cynthia Lummis is from Wyoming, and she is a big proponent of Bitcoin. She's been putting all types of bills forward, and Trump kind of was talking off the cuff like he does. Senator Lummis was very strategic and very detailed on what she wanted to do, and so she laid out a perfect bill. Now, regardless if RFK or Trump win, even if it ends up being Kamala Harris campaign or you know, presidency, we have senators like Senator Lummis who is still putting these bills forward. So even if both of those presidents lose, well, we still have people in the government putting bills like this forward. The United States currently maintains strategic reserves in certain hard assets, again, oil, gold, critical to American national security. And she wants the U.S. government to hold on to the Bitcoin for 20 years. So she wants them to take the Bitcoin we have, put it into the strategic reserves, and hold it for a period of 20 years. Establish a decentralized network of secure Bitcoin vaults operated by the United States Department of Treasury. So they want to direct the Treasury to actually hold the Bitcoin through these decentralized vaults. Implement a 1 million, much bigger, 1 million unit Bitcoin purchase program over a period of time. She wants to take 5% of the total Bitcoin supply, mirroring the size and scope of gold reserves, which puts it up to back to that 1 million. 1 million is about 5% of the supply. And as she said, keep it on scope with the gold reserves, paid for by diversifying existing funds within the Federal Reserve System, and finally, affirm self-custody rights of private Bitcoin holders. So some of the things we're seeing coming out of the Biden, now Biden-Harris regime, especially led by Elizabeth Warren on anti-crypto, is they're attacking the right to self-custody, meaning they don't want you to own your own Bitcoin. The reason why is, of course, own nothing, be happy, literally. In a debt-based monetary system that we live in, you literally aren't allowed to own anything. So those stocks that you think you own, you know, Apple, Google, Tesla, et cetera, you don't actually own those legally. They're owed to you. The money in your bank, it's not your money, not legally. It's owed to you. Your house, you basically rent the land by paying every single month to the, you know, property tax assessor. Don't pay that. You get kicked out like any other tenant would. And so we don't own anything. And the last thing that we can own right now is Bitcoin. And they don't even want us to own that. Okay, now all three of those, Lummis, Trump, and RFK, all are sort of proposing about the same thing. Now, why is this historical? Well, as I talk about quite often, about every 80 years, we have a financial revolution. You might have seen me use this chart many times before. And so this sort of charts out these 80 years. We're witnessing one right here. About 80 years ago, we had one, another 80 years. So here was 1944, the Bretton Woods Agreement. Here, 1873, the Panic of 1873, Panic of 1796, which was at the same time as the American Revolution. So about every 80 years, we have this. And last 80 years ago was the Bretton Woods Agreement. Now, of course, that was historical, where it changed the entire monetary system of the entire world. Literally, the whole world got together at Bretton Woods and agreed that the dollar would be backed by gold and all the currencies of the world would be pegged to the U.S. dollar. And that changed the system. It put the U.S. at the very center of the entire global monetary system, created the U.S. dollar hegemony that we know today. Now, what's interesting about this is, again, 80 years later, we're having another financial revolution. Now, what's interesting about this is that Bitcoin grew from the bottom up. All right. So basically, it started with individual people. It started with shadowy coders, and it started moving up into more mainstream, into obviously the point that we have today in Nashville, just happening right now. But it started from the bottom up. And as it went from the bottom up, from people, not from governments, but from people up, finally, it got to the government level. We had El Salvador was the first country to adopt Bitcoin as its reserve standard. Now, Bitcoin is also at the bottom of the country stockpile, right? It's one of the smallest countries in the world, poorest countries in the world. So it was the first to adopt it. So we had a people movement from the bottom up, and then El Salvador was a government from the bottom up. Now, the president of El Salvador, President Bukele, has been talking with lots of other government leaders, but other small governments, you know, UAE or other small countries like that. Now, what's interesting, though, is it's been bottom up. However, I always thought that the U.S. would be the last to move because of the dollar. They're the ones that have everything to lose. It's the currency of, you know, king currency. However, so if the United States moves, then every other nation is going to move. Now, would they? Well, let's just see. Donald Trump is favored to win, 65% chance, and I believe he'll do what he says. That means there's about a 65% chance this happens. Now, real quickly, while I was at the Bitcoin conference, we had a lot of discussions, and we saw how this industry is literally changing right before our eyes, with big money coming in and specifically trying to move into more public plays around the Bitcoin crypto space. There is big money to be made. As a matter of fact, I think if you want to double, triple, even 5x your net worth over the next couple of years, you are going to have your chance. As we move through the second phase of this, I'm going to break all this down with all the data I got at the conference, and you can come join me live next week. There's a link down below. I'm going to show you all the charts, all the graphs, show you how the money is moving and how you can just play along with this to double, triple, quadruple, whatever over the next couple of years. So check it out. Join me free. It's live. Come hang out. All right. So anyway, moving along. So let's look at the math of this, okay? So if we look at the math, what we can see is, again, they propose 550 Bitcoin per day. Now, what's interesting about this is the Bitcoin supply, every day we have Bitcoin that's released. And what happens is, over time, every 4 years, the supply of Bitcoin being released gets cut in half, all right? That's known as the halving cycle. We just had that a few months ago. Currently, right now, there's about 450 Bitcoin per day being created. That's what we call the inflation rate, right? The flow, the stock, the existing supply to the flow, the new incoming inflation rate. So 450. They want to buy 550, which is more than the new supply being created. Now, in 4 years, or about 3.5 years from now, this will get cut in half and it'll be more like 225, but they want to still continue buying 550 per day. Now, this doesn't include all the other Bitcoin that the ETFs are buying. The ETFs are buying about that same amount. Individuals like you and I that buy every single week on our paychecks or whatever. And of course, the stampede of other governments that will move in to start buying as well. Now, price is always the equilibrium of supply over demand, right? Now, we know the supply is fixed at 21 million, so it's a fixed supply. So if the demand goes up 550 a day on top of the ETFs buying 550 a day on top of us, and then the rush of other nations, what do you think happens to the price? Well, it's pretty easy to understand. As a matter of fact, what happens when they set a floor of 550 days, it sets a price floor, right? We know that they're going to be buying that every single day, and it will set that price, and it gives us a lot more ability to sort of predict out into the future where that price of Bitcoin would be. Now, a better way to do this would be not to announce this and to secretly start doing it, but to make that proclamation, it will set a floor in the price and send it up. It'll be pretty amazing. We can see here, this is known as a stock-to-flow price model. It's one of a dozen indicators that we could potentially look at. And what we could see is that this shows that potentially, you know, by end of next year, Bitcoin could be anywhere around 150 up to as high as 400,000 at the upper band. So that would be about the highest level that it's sort of projected out to be in this level. More realistically, probably in the 150, 200,000 range. However, if news like this goes through, even if the RFK and Trump lose, but Lummis gets her bill through, 400K is very clearly in sight. Now, this is a big maybe if one day, but Trump is favored to win right now. As a matter of fact, I believe he's, at the time of this recording, in the betting markets, I believe he has about a 60 to 65% chance of winning. So that's not a long shot. I believe Trump will do that if he wins. He said he would on day one. I believe he'll do it. And he's got a 65% chance of winning. Do the math in your own head. Okay, now what's interesting about this is that, again, why did Trump and why did RFK feel the need to come and address the Bitcoin crowd specifically? Well, that's because it's the people's vote. What we can see right here in politics, obviously politicians need to raise money for their campaigns. And we get these super PACs where they basically bundle up money and deliver it over to whatever candidate may be. And what we can see based off of the campaign contributions right here is we can see that the Fair Shake pack, which is basically the Bitcoin / crypto pack. So this is the Bitcoin crypto companies, the people that are donating into this, not directly, but into this super PAC right here. We can see it's become the number one super PAC right now. Bigger than the Make America Great Again super PAC, just barely exceeded that. Bigger than the Senate Majority PAC, and on and on and on. So the Bitcoin and crypto crowd is not just some little fringe thing. And I know it's magic internet money. It's not some fringe thing. It's gone to become the largest pack. Now, there's a lot of back and forth on this. Like, is this good or bad? I thought Bitcoin was supposed to separate money and state. That's a whole other topic I can dig into. Let me know in the comments down below if you want me to do that. But what we're seeing is there's a lot of single issue voters, seemingly, who want Bitcoin to be on the ballot. But the reality is, like I said earlier, it's not that they want Bitcoin to be on the ballot. It's that we want freedom to be on the ballot. We want freedom to choose how we want to save our money and how we want to spend it. If you don't like it, cool, no big deal. Don't use it. But why would you want to ever vote to take away someone's right to choose? And that's what we're seeing right now, loud and clear. Now, here's the rug pull. You ready for it? So Harris, Kamala Harris, seeing what's going on, seeing that Trump and RFK are generating all the support, seeing that they're tapping into this massive donor base, very affluent donor base as well, Kamala Harris says, maybe I should be pro-crypto, which is pretty hard to do when the Harris-Biden regime has been overly aggressive, and not overly aggressive, literally saying anti-crypto, literally doing everything they can to shut it down. So how could she go from being so anti, literally openly attacking, to like, well, maybe we should reconsider this. So we have here Kamala Harris campaign seeks a reset with crypto companies. She wants a reset, a do-over. Hey, forget all the stuff that I've been trying to do to shut you down for all these years. Forget all the money that we've caused you to waste on frivolous lawsuits that we've been suing you through the SEC. Forget all that. Let's reset this. Okay. Well, Vice President's team aims to improve relations after industry criticism of the Biden administration. Well, the Bitcoin conference did invite Harris to come, did invite her to come address the crowd, and she turned that down. Now, just to give you an idea of some of the persecution the Biden-Harris regime has been doing, Biden wants to add a mining tax. A mining tax. So anyone that's in the Bitcoin space, that's doing Bitcoin mining, helps process transactions, secure the network, he wants to tax them as much as 30% tax on the electricity. So, you know, you can buy electricity, do whatever you want with it. But no. If you mine Bitcoin with electricity, we're going to add a 30% tax to this. This is just one example of how hard they've been attacking the industry. Like, literally, you can use electricity for anything you want. But if you use it for that, you have to pay an additional 30% fine. I mean, it's just insane. That's an idea. But here's the thing. Kamala is like I said, the whole Kamala Biden campaign has been so aggressive that now even the Democratic legislators, the DNC, had to write Kamala and say, you need to back off. You've been too aggressive. We're going to lose the campaign. Several U.S. Democrat legislators and electoral candidates, not just the candidates, the legislators, but the candidates, have now written to the DNC calling for a change in the party's approach towards the digital asset industry. This development comes as the Republican presidential candidates, Donald Trump, has continued to gain popularity as a cryptocurrency advocate ahead of coming U.S. elections. Now, Trump, I didn't really get into the specifics. He didn't show that he really understood it quite as good as RFK because Trump didn't read speech. He was just ad-libbing. And some of what Trump said was maybe some people took it as a little patronizing. But he basically said, look, I want you to be free to do whatever you want. If you want to do Bitcoin or crypto or whatever it is that you're playing with, that's what he said, do it. And of course, that's why I said it's not Bitcoin on the ballot. It's freedom to choose. And that's exactly what the DNC is seeing. It's like, hey, this persecution of this industry is going to lose us a lot of ground. Now, Cameron Winklevoss, one of the Winklevoss twins from Facebook story and now Bitcoin billionaires, he said, hey, beware of the big bluff from Harris and her advisors. They're in the process of working on a quote unquote reset with the crypto industry. He said, but hey, be respectful of your time. Let me just lay out a couple things. Please don't bother unless, don't even bother trying to have a reset, unless you're prepared to take swift, bold action and concrete action. You can't burn bridges for 4 years and then expect to rebuild them with words, with your lip service. Like, that doesn't work. Like, you have been overly aggressive for 4 years. You need to come out and you need to talk that down. So this is where we're at. However, that's the lip service. This is exactly what Winklevoss is warning about, because the real actions are coming here. This is the rug pull. You ready for it? The big bluff. Now, while Kamala is seemingly wanting to repair ties with the industry, the wedge that RFK and Trump have is to take this, you know, 1% of the Bitcoin supply, the 200,000 Bitcoin, and move it to the books of the government to keep it. And as they have this wedge that Kamala could just say, hey, I'll do that too. She could do that. But no, she won't, because she's overly aggressive. So what does she do? Well, she secretly, the Biden, Harris, whoever's running the government, whatever, regime, starts secretly doing, this is from Cynthia Lummis, Senator Lummis, behind the curtain, the Harris-Biden administration, executing at the direction of Secretary Yellen and Senator Warren, the Biden-Harris regime, is operating a business as usual with the hope you aren't paying attention. So what is that business as usual that you're not paying attention to? Well, the U.S. government just moved $2 billion of that seized Bitcoin 2 days after Trump's speech. So the Biden-Harris campaign is like, well, we're not going to openly embrace it. We could do that. We could give people freedom, but we won't do that. What we'll do is we'll get rid of that 200,000 Bitcoin. We'll just dump it on the market real quick. So Trump and RFK have no leg to stand on. Now, why would they do something like that? I mean, they could not be that mean and evil, could they? They couldn't really actively be trying to subvert the will of the people. I mean, they wouldn't do that, right? I mean, this is a democracy, right? It's what the people want. Well, we have precedent for this. I'll explain to you in a second. Tyler Winklevoss again says on Saturday, Trump pledged to never sell any of the U.S. government's Bitcoin. 2 days later, the Biden-Harris administration regime moves $2 billion of the Bitcoin to sell it. Great look and great way to reset with our industry. So you say you want to reset with us, but you're literally subverting the will of the people and trying to rug pull what the president nominees or people running for presidential elections are saying. Now, again, would they really do that, or could this just be coincidental? Well, let me just take you back not that far. Well, we can see I've reported this on the past. Here we have an article. This is directly from Senator Scott's website. I pulled it from maybe the most authoritative site. This is from August of last year, so about a year ago. And you might remember that Trump was trying to build a border wall and built some of the border wall. Of course, the Democrats were fighting that border wall. Well, a lot of the parts for the border wall had been built, and they've been sitting there in Texas. And the Biden administration, of course, was not moving on this. And so the Republican, the GOP side, started moving, and they started passing bills that were going to get the wall started again. And so just as they were getting these bills passed, that would basically be able to get around what the president was trying to block, and we could start building the wall again, what did the government, what did the Biden-Harris regime do? Well, what they did is they secretly started to sell off all the parts that had been sitting there, paid for by your tax dollars. The will of the people had approved to go ahead and get the wall restarted again. So the Biden-Harris regime secretly started to dump them, and for literally pennies on the dollar, getting rid of them as fast as they can. Why? So the GOP, the Republicans, the will of the people could not be done, which is exactly what's being done with the Bitcoin right now. The people want it. They voted with their money. Trump and RFK are running on this, and they're just going to secretly dump it. Pretty interesting, right? Now, what do you think about that? Do you see that this has become a big bargaining chip, or is it still that magic internet money that people think it is? I'd love to know. Also, by the way, next week I am having another live presentation where I'm going to be bringing all the information I got from the Bitcoin conference and let you know what's going on with Bitcoin and crypto. And hint, 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 there's big things going on the way that Bitcoin is now made mainstream, specifically going into the public sector. If you're not paying attention to this, you're missing a chance to potentially double, quadruple your net worth over the next couple of years. So come join me live if you want. There's a link down below. I'm going to show you all the charts, all the information that I've got, the companies that are actually blowing up right now. So if you want to take advantage of this, don't miss out on this opportunity. You're sleeping on history being made right now. Come join me. There's a link down below. But let me know what you think about Harris's deal. Is it lip service, or is she proving her real colors with her actions? Let me know in the comments down below. Of course, as always, give me a thumbs up on this video if you like it. And if you don't, you can give me a thumbs down. That's okay. But at least tell me what you think. And subscribe while you're at it. And that's what I got. All right, to your success. I'm out.